Good morning, everybody. My name is Milton Casey, and I'm an alcoholic. I am currently, my current service position is delegate of Area 64, Tennessee. I'm a panel 54 delegate. If y'all are nervous, bear with me, because I am too. Y'all aren't nervous? Okay, we do have a format to follow. First thing I would ask us to do is to have, I want to ask for a moment of silence and gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 70 years and what. As I said earlier, my name is Milton Casey, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm a member of Area 64, Tennessee. I'm currently serving as delegate. This is my third international convention. I've been very fortunate that at my first international convention, I was serving as the corrections chair for Area 64, Tennessee, and had a really great group of volunteers, AA volunteers there, worked very hard in Tennessee, and when I went to San Diego, I attended the corrections workshops and enjoyed them. In 2000, I was fortunate to be able to attend the Minneapolis convention. And at that one, I was serving as Area 64's chairperson. Now, that wasn't quite as much fun, but it's still a great opportunity, a great, wonderful service that I served in. I suppose any job that I would want to do over, I believe in motivation, but any job I wanted to do over would be area chair. I love being up here and in charge. Or at least I thought I was in charge. And here we are in 2005, and here in Toronto, and I'm currently serving as the delegate. I couldn't have asked for things to work out any better in my life. If I'd have planned it, it wouldn't have been as good. As corrections chair, I got involved in my area of service. I had 3 first birthdays, and I was having trouble making it 2 years. My sponsor, bless him, he passed away in 96, he said, maybe you need to do more. And I didn't know what he meant by more, because I didn't know. I'm from a small town, Ripley, Tennessee, 6,000 souls. I had no idea that there was AA outside Ripley, outside the county. When I came in the program, I thought we had it wrapped up around that. He suggested I go into a prison and serve as a carrying a meeting. That's all. Just take in a meeting, bring out gratitude. I got down there, and those guys all wanted a book. The ones that seemed to be interested in our program wanted literature. In order to provide them with literature, I begged, borrowed, and stole from every group nearby. Bought some out of my own pocket. I just begged from door to door for books. I got a copy of the minutes that were mailed to our GSR, the area minutes, and I read the corrections report, and they talked about giving away these books. And I thought, well, this is a deal. So I started attending area assemblies and got active in that committee, the corrections committee. And after a couple of years, I was asked to serve on that committee, and then, as I say, in 95 and 96, I served as the corrections chairman for area 64. I started carrying that meeting into Fort Pillow Prison in Lauderdale County in 1987, and in 1998 I gave it to somebody else to carry for a while because I became more active in area affairs and my time was limited. And you can do too much. You know, it's good to do your part, but you can overload your wagon, even in Alcoholics Anonymous, just in any other organization. So I was asked I've been asked many, many times by my area and members of my home group, what you going to do when you ain't delegate no more? And I'm going to make coffee, and I'm going to go back to that prison and get refilled with some of that gratitude that I had a couple of years ago. I still have a lot, but there's a difference in the area service and general service work than there is in just going into a county jail or going into a county prison and getting down there and sitting on the floor with them. You can do that as a delegate, too. But there's lots more duties as a delegate and a chair. And I know there's lots of past delegates and chairs and area service people in this room, and I'm sure you all know what I'm talking about. I promised someone from our area that I'd talk a little bit about something that we're doing in Area 64, Tennessee. I'm allotted a few minutes up here before our panelists have their time. In the Nashville area, in Davidson County. Davidson County is in, Nashville actually encompasses all of Davidson County now. I believe the county and city have been incorporated together. We have a corrections committee in the Nashville area that are working a STEP program inside the state prisons in our capital city, Nashville. They have men's programs, women's programs. They go to high security facilities. They go to DUIs, lockups, whatever. But they have a weekend program where they go into the jail and work the steps. The women have a shortened program they have a smaller crowd, so they can be more concentrated and intense, more focused, working the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Men do it over several weekends. And a gentleman by the name of Scott L. in the Nashville area was instrumental in getting this started. He received this letter. It's dated June 9th, and it's from the Sheriff's Office, and it explains the AA Weekend Workshop. It said, in January of 2003, my staff and I began working with the local corrections committee of Alcoholics Anonymous to create a weekend workshop. Several months later, 9 AA members spent the weekend, 2 days, in our facility, actually taking about 50 offenders through the 12 steps, and the results were impressive. Members of the Correction Development Center staff reported that the atmosphere in the facility was different on the following Monday. It was quiet and calm, and we had fewer behavioral problems, even from offenders who did not attend the workshop. I requested an evaluation through their use of critique sheets to see what the results of the weekend were from their perspective. They all reported that they now understood what it means to be an alcoholic and why they needed to participate in the program. They also understood the necessity of having sponsors, as well as the need to attempt the AA way of life. They no longer feared completing the steps. The program was very successful for us, and if you choose to participate, I hope it is as successful for you. If you have any questions, please don't hesitate to call. And this is signed by Darren Hall, the Sheriff of Nashville, Davidson County. Scott told me that anyone that would like a copy of the program that they use for the men's side and the women's side, he has given me a limited number of copies. But if you will give me your, after this meeting adjourns, I will stay up here, and anyone that will give me their name, phone number, or address, or I'll give you a way to contact Scott. He said he'd be willing to share this with you. Apparently, it's a very effective program in working the steps. Now, to our panelists. We have 3 esteemed guests here with us today. And as I'm sure they would agree. And we have Kenny, Kathleen, and Bob. And the way the program is set up, Kenny's going to speak first, and then Kathleen will speak next, and then Bob. And if we have any time left, and I hope we will, we're going to limit them to about 20 minutes, and we'll take some questions and perhaps find some answers from either us or someone in the room. So if y'all will, I'd like to introduce Kenny H. from Ohio.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Kenny, and I'm an alcoholic. In the program, it lists me as from Ohio, but that's a mistake. I'm out of Michigan, Kalamazoo, Michigan. That's District 4, Area 34. And I'm a little nervous, you know. Last night, I made the mistake of going to the young people's hospitality suite a little before midnight and drinking a cup of coffee. And I'm not sure if it was the coffee or the anxiety of speaking today that kept me up half the night, but here I am. And I'm gonna tell you a little about why I got involved with corrections and what we're doing in our area. And my background as it is, I started getting in trouble when I was a teenager, and that was the first time that I saw the inside of a jailhouse. And as it went throughout my history, I've been incarcerated quite a few times. In fact, I've lost count. It's somewhere up around 25 to 30 times that I've been locked up in jail. And I even did a small term in prison. And that's part of the reason that I got involved with corrections. Back in the early 90s, I was living out on the streets in California for a couple years, homeless, and that's when I ended up in prison. And I had a 16-month sentence to do, and it was a new prison, and there were no AA programs in there, none whatsoever. So, of course, I always worked my own program and thought I'd be fine. The day I was released, within 2 hours, I was drunk. And within 2 days, I had violated my parole. But luckily, they didn't send me back to prison. They did allow me to transfer my parole back to Michigan, and that's how I ended up back here. I was born and raised in St. Joseph, Michigan, and ended up moving to Kalamazoo after treatment. But so I had a little background of being on the inside, and in fact, I got sober the last time I was incarcerated. Now, see, I'd been going to meetings on and off for close to 20 years, of course, nudged by the courts. And, you know, all those years I didn't realize what was so valuable in this program. I didn't even know there was 12 steps. That's how close-minded I was. But there was a gentleman that brought meetings into the jail, and he sat me down one day, and we talked, and he asked me if I'd like to end that vicious cycle that I was living. And I certainly agreed I'd like to do that, and he told me to work these steps, and my God, there was a miracle right there. I had a year in the county jail, and it allowed me to do the best I could on those steps and change my whole life. And having had a spiritual awakening in jail and coming to know a freedom that I still know today, it's amazing just thinking back, being incarcerated and having this freedom. And it's just miraculous. It truly is. I am nothing short of a miracle. And anyhow, after I was released from jail, I went through a rehab, and my counselor suggested I move to Kalamazoo, where there was a sort of a three-quarter way, halfway house to make a transition back into the world instead of going to my hometown. So I agreed and moved to Kalamazoo, and that's where really my life began again. And found a home group in Comstock, Michigan, and you know, I was going there for a month or two, and the person that was making the coffee asked if someone would volunteer for 2 weeks while he took a vacation. And so I stepped up. He never came back. 2.5 years later, I was still making the coffee. And then I selected a sponsor out of that meeting, and he's the one that, we didn't really have an election. He just kind of appointed me GSR. And that's where my service career started, so to say. And I got involved and started going to district meetings. And after a while, eventually prodded by my service sponsor to go to the area assemblies. And after a couple of years, I finally started attending them. And at first, I sat in on a grapevine committee, because it's a small committee of one person. And the grapevine's been such a great tool for my recovery that I tried to help there. But then we held the area assembly in Kalamazoo a couple years back, and I sat in on the corrections one time, and thinking maybe I could help out there. And that day they needed an alternate chairperson for the corrections committee, and I assumed, well, there's not much to that position. So I volunteered, and that chairperson never showed up at another area assembly. So after 3 months of that, I was nominated to take over the corrections position, and so of course I volunteered and accepted that, you know, thinking maybe I could give back, but of course I got a lot of help from the people that on the committee and people past chairs, and we were able, the first year that I was involved with corrections, we put together a complete three-ring binder with all the meetings listed throughout the whole entire state of Michigan, and got those hand-delivered into 21 facilities in Area 34, which is a great feat in itself. It helps them find a meeting when they get out, and that's when I slowly started to learn what corrections was all about, trying to carry the message into the facilities. And of course, literature is a big part of that. And I've depleted quite a bit of the funds from our area getting literature sent into all our facilities, and we've been doing a pretty good job. And along with that position, the Area 34 Corrections Chair, I kind of inherited the Area 34 Pre-Release Coordinator also. And I had a little experience with correspondence. I did that a couple times through the General Service Office, and corresponded with some inmates in other states. Of course, most of the time they were asking for money. But I found that through pre-release, it was a little more effective, because what we have is, it's like bridging the gap, I believe, in other states, where if someone's going to get released, what they do is they contact us, they send a letter out, and it goes to a central location in Michigan, and then those letters are sent out to a pre-release coordinator, because Michigan's split up into three different areas. So I was able to get involved there, and I've been corresponding with quite a few inmates from around the state that get paroled back to Kalamazoo, and we've got a lot of people in our area involved in that. When I first took over, we had no list of any names. I don't know what happened to the original list, but We've got just about every district in our area covered now, and there's no inmate that goes unanswered. Of course, sometimes we get them a little late, but it's great for them to know that there's help on the outside, because it's so important for an inmate to get to a meeting within the first 24 hours of release to remain sober. It's just a wonderful tool. Of course, when I first got involved with corrections, having a past of doing time, I didn't think I would be able to be approved to go into any of the facilities, but I was told that there's plenty that can be done from the outside. But of course, at first I did apply at the local Kalamazoo County Jail, and I also sent in some requests to a local facility down in Coldwater. It's the closest prison to Kalamazoo. And about a year later, in our local, at our district mini-conference, the person that handled those meetings came up to me and said I had been approved to go into the Kalamazoo County Jail. And, I thought that was great, to be able to try to help somebody in jail like where I got sober. And not 2 days later, I received a letter from the Coldwater facility. It's actually Lakeland Correctional Facility in Coldwater, and they had also approved me to come in behind the walls in the prison. So I started attending meetings inside our prison, and that's on a weekly basis every Wednesday, and I was welcomed with open arms. And I'll tell you, that first night that I walked out of that prison, and I looked across through the barbed wire and the chain link, and I remembered when I had done time, and it brought me back to that place, and I was just overwhelmed with gratitude that I was able to leave. But I was also able to take this message into that facility and give hope to some of these inmates where it's needed so much. Because as a whole, I know a lot of the people in AA might not have been to jail or prison, but there's a whole lot of us that should have. But for the... but for the grace of God, I'm not in prison yet today. I should be. For the things I'd done, but I don't regret the past. I went through, had to go through everything I did. But that first night that I left that prison, it was just an overwhelming feeling. And so I really look forward to going back there every week. I was in there Wednesday night, and I shared with the group that I was coming here today, and that I was asked to speak. I'm carrying the message, and I had all their blessing. And that's a wonderful thing, because these guys are practicing true humility. They know what it is to be humble, and we forget a lot of the little things that we take for granted. We have so much, and they have nothing in there. All their rights are taken away, and it was amazing that so many of them thanked me for bringing the message in there. It was just a gratifying experience, and not to mention also in the Kalamazoo County Jail. I go in there once a month. I'm allowed in there on the third Friday of every month, and when they allow a meeting in there, and try to help some of those guys too, just to let them know that there is hope, that your life doesn't have to end there. And it's just amazing, this program's done so much for me, and service work has truly enhanced my sobriety tenfold. I can't tell you, I wish more people would get involved with service, but being able to carry the message into these correctional facilities is truly so rewarding. At our last area assembly, someone from District 16, that's the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, extended an invitation from a prison up there. There's quite a few prisons in the UP because they're so far away from everybody, see. But one of the prisons asked if the corrections would like to enter that facility for one day and carry a service workshop. And I volunteered right off the bat, and everybody else that's on the committee at that day also was more than glad to enter. And probably by the time that's going to be in September, hopefully by then we'll have quite a few people entering that facility. That's the day before our area assembly in September. And just being asked to enter another facility, you know, it's amazing. And I try to make sure that our facilities in Area 34 have literature, that they have meetings. It's so important to remembering back when I was in prison without a meeting. And it's just It's just amazing what being able to be involved with the corrections has done so much for my life and my sobriety. And I just want to thank you all.
Thank you, and now we'll have Kathleen.
Don't be ugly. Hi, I'm Kathy O'Shea. I'm an alcoholic. Okay, I got my name right. My sobriety birth date is August 12, 1994. My home group is the CK Serenity Group that meets in Cerrito, West Virginia on Wednesdays. My current service position is Area 73 Chairman. Area 73 is West Virginia. Yes, we are a state. We are about the size of Canada if you flattened us out. So it's not to embarrass those from my area and my other friends from all over, because I have a lot of friends in this room. If I look at you, I'm going to cry. I'd like to thank whoever it was that was responsible for asking me to come. It may be Doug. I don't know. I have the kind of ego that whenever I'm asked to do something, I go, yeah. But now I know why I'm on this panel. They needed a good-looking person. Bob has now breathed a sigh of relief because he's not going to get a chance to talk. Anyway, I'm going to do my very best to keep it to 20 minutes or less. West Virginia, we have special issues with our corrections. We are a very rural state, and we are very, very hilly. We currently have about 5,200 people in state prisons. We have 1,700 people in work release and parole. We have 3,700 people in regional jails, and for a state of our population, that's a lot of people behind bars. We also have 4 federal prisons in the state that I don't really have statistics on. I think we're going into, if I'm not mistaken, every single state prison. We're going into 8 of the 10 regional jails, and we're going into 2 of the federal prisons, and that's a pretty good record for carrying corrections. Some of our members have to drive from 1 to 2 hours one way, and we're not talking interstate driving or traffic, to get to these rural areas to carry the message. And quite often they get there, there's been a problem, they don't get in. You know, they turn around, they go home, and they come back the next time. Because of that, because of a rural population, and when they build these things, they build them in the rural areas, which will make, you know, there's not a lot of groups, and probably, as I've heard all over the country, that it's the same people doing it. And, you know, and I would like to applaud all you people right now who are carrying message into correctional facilities. And if you're not, I hope you get involved. I'd like to tell you about myself, but I only have 20 minutes. Might have known my 15 minutes of fame, I'm going to be anonymous. I am standing up, and I do have on a dress. Actually, what I wear behind the podium is harder than talking, but then I remember all you ever see is the top of my head anyway, so it's okay. But I'm correctly dressed. I've never been to jail. I've never had a moving violation. Sharon, who rode up with me, we drove up here. I didn't speed the whole way here. She couldn't believe it. I mean, I drive it. 65, if it's 65. I'd like to tell you it's because I'm a very moral person. It's because I don't want a ticket. I'm just cheap. Well, anyway, I drank and drank and drank and drank and drank and drank and drank. And what I discovered is when you sit at home in this week's outfit and drink gin tonics and watch TV and talk on the phone, it's really hard to get arrested, you know. And if I had known terms in incarceration, you know, was going to be a badge of honor, I probably would have driven more. But the advantage is I have no problem with the clearance. I mean, I don't even have an unpaid parking ticket, never have, so I get cleared instantly. So it's been a real blessing. I got involved in corrections because one of my skills is telling people what to do. And a good friend of mine accepted the corrections position at the district level. And it had been in our district, it was a position in name. People weren't doing anything. So I was going, Jim, call the jail. You need to call the jail. He goes, well, I'll call him. You need to go over there. You need to make an appointment. You need to write a letter. You know, I like the term tenacious. My husband uses the term tick-like. So we eventually we eventually got into a work release center, and we started that as a weekly speaker meeting. And it was just me and Jim. Well, he never asked anybody else, but, you know, I'm always willing to talk him. And so we just kept doing that. And then he accepted a job out of state, and I just sort of moved on to his position and finished that term. And then I stood at the district level, and I'm going to that work release, and I'm getting people to go. And I am so proud of myself. I've never suffered from low self-esteem. Anyway, and then it dawns on me, we have a county jail. Totally forgot about the county jail. So I try to get us into the county jail. Well, they don't want to talk to Kathy O'Shea, nobody. But we had a member in our district that had, like, PhD. And they would take a meeting with Dr. So-and-so. So Dr. So-and-so made the appointment. We went in, and they said we could go into the county jail. And then I have to deal with the evening shift guy who has a very low opinion of Alcoholics Anonymous and everyone else in the world. And so he told me to call back and find out, you know, when our meeting is. And so I call, and then I wait a few days, and I call. And I wait a few days, and I call. And then I just start calling every day. And I'd go, hello, is Captain Bowman there? And they'd say, he's not here, I can take a message. This is Kathy O'Shea with Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm wondering when our meeting is. And then I call back the next day, and the next day. And finally, it's like, okay. And he got us here. And so he went to the county jail. So I was really proud of me doing that. And then I remember we have two counties in our district. So we got in the other county jail. And then West Virginia's been very proactive, and we are closing all our county jails and building regional jails because a lot of our jails weren't going to be up to standard. So that's why eventually we will have all regional jails. By this time, I've been going to the committee meetings at our area assembly and had heard some of the problems and issues with the regional jail. So when they opened the one in Huntington, I knew what to do. I zoomed in on the inmate services guy, said, we're Alcoholics Anonymous, we want to come in. And we made the transition from county jails to regional jails and didn't miss a meeting. We were able to go on in. And then they opened a state prison in our district, but it's an hour and a half one way away. And I got a hold of them, and this gent, Bobby Updegrave at that prison, he's not in our fellowship, he did everything he could for us. I have several ladies here that are my prison pals. And we drive up, we also stop at McDonald's and Dairy Queen, but anyway. We've been getting in the car, and it takes us an hour and a half, and we drive up there and get a little snack, and then we go in and we carry the message to these ladies in the correctional facility, and Pat and I were able to be there for the very first meeting that they had of Alcoholics Anonymous, and for a lot of those people, it was their very first run with Alcoholics Anonymous, and what a gift, and a little bit later, I'm going to tell you about one of the ladies that we met there. Now, my biggest obstacle was getting in a federal prison. I had received a letter, I had stood for area corrections chair and received that position, and I got a letter from an inmate in a federal prison in Beckley, West Virginia, begging for outside people to come in. Well, I kept contacting people in that area, and for whatever reasons, no one was available. And when anyone anywhere reaches out, I want the hand of AA always to be there for that. I am responsible. And this was on the other side of the state. And in West Virginia, that's a long way to go. Remember, we are the South of Canada. And I offered to go myself, but it was a men's prison, and he did not want women going in. So I called up people in the Charleston, West Virginia area and the Huntington, West Virginia area and said, would you be willing to drive to Beckley twice a year to go to a meeting? And I got enough people that said yes, who filled out the paperwork, who got approved, and after probably 150 phone calls, because the inmate services guy there didn't want us coming in at all, but once again, tick light. And then God knows what he's doing. He gave him a new ward, and it was very favorable to Alcoholics Anonymous. And when the inmate services guy wasn't moving at a pace I thought he should, I wrote a real nice letter to the warden, and we got in, and we've been going in. And, like I said, some of these guys will drive an hour and a half to an hour and 45 minutes to 2 hours one way to get to that prison. And you never know if you're going to get in. And we don't have phone service in a lot of our states, so you've got a cell phone that can't even call and tell you. So you drive there, and you wait. But for the gentlemen that have gone, it's just been a fabulous experience. I mean, they just go on and on and on about it. And I know what that's like. And I do this, and I know a lot of people say, well, I've never been to jail, or I don't have anything to offer them. You know, I tell you, if you've never been to jail, one thing, you're going to get cleared really quickly. And they know how to get drunk. You know, they want to know how to live out their sober. And I know especially with the women in the women's prison, there's a lot of those issues about their children. And when we go in to visit, we walk by the visiting room, and I see there are women in there and their children. You know, they're visiting their children. And I'm thinking, well, I don't have any kids, but how fun would it be to go visit your mom in prison? You know, when people say, where's your mama? She's in prison. But I need to let them know that there's a place when they get out that we don't care if you've been in prison. You know, and some of us will be in prison. We're going to love you no matter what. We don't care what you've done, how you got there. You know, we're just going to love you. And that's what I really like about this thing, that we go in and carry that message of love and hope. And I bring a little humor in because, you know, it's not so fun in jail, I don't think. But I think I'm going to do pretty good. Okay, well, I'm going to have to close. But let me tell you about Holly. We met Holly in Lakin at the Women's Correctional Facility, and I have her permission. I'm going to read you a little things from her letters. And we started, Pat and I started going in, and then Joan and Cindy started carrying the step study into the prison, and we just did a few steps at a time, and we gave them some stuff to read out of the big book, and then questions that they wanted to write the answers to. And, of course, you know, as we know, a lot of people just come to get out of their cell, but you know what? I know if I was in jail, I'd go to a meeting to get out of my cell, you know. And I always think, how many people do we have in meetings that are just there, you know, for whatever reason? I don't care if you're there for your dog, you know. My job is just to plant the seed, and maybe somewhere down the line that if you want us, we're going to be there. And I very much believe that we're attraction rather than promotion. And if the one thing I want to do when I go into those facilities is to make Alcoholics Anonymous attractive, my need to boss them around, I try to let go of that. And I want them to know that when they come, that we want them there and we love them, and that's what we're about. We're about living one day at a time, because they certainly know the concept of one day at a time, of staying sober. But we had Holly here. We gave out this stuff, and every time Holly would come to these meetings with her legal pad, and she answered all the questions, and usually we'd say, are there any questions? You know, a lot of times they won't talk in prison, especially if there happens to be, you know, some supervision in the room. But she would talk and ask questions, and she was really, really excited, and you know, somebody may think she's doing that on the parole or whatever, but half the time we had meetings, there wasn't any staff there, so they wouldn't know what she said. So she wasn't scoring brownie points. She was doing it for her, and she was just moving on and on. We got to know her, and when she was finishing up her time there, she had to go down to Tennessee and do some more time. And this girl got a piece about her that you won't believe. And she, you know, she was working all the steps. I'm probably going to cry, but anyway. So before I start sobbing and my nose runs, which doesn't make me attractive, I'm going to read you some excerpts from Holly's letter. Okay. I can't tell you how much it means when you are locked up. It's hard to keep hope when you are in an environment where you see the same girls come in and out and in and out, even some that seem like they are working a program. It's a little disheartening, like, can I do this? But seeing you guys really living and working the program is a breath of fresh air. It gives me the hope I need, one day at a time. I want you to be encouraged, because the work you do behind the walls is so important. I truly feel that God knows some people can't make it to AA on the streets. Lord knows I couldn't. If I hadn't gotten incarcerated, I may never have made it. But the first time I stepped foot into a meeting, even incarcerated, I knew I was home. I felt the hope that was missing before. At the end, when I said keep coming back, I felt like I was saying it to the outside ladies, like keep coming back in to do the meetings. Ha! Now I know it means meeting makers make them. My higher power and the program have given me such a peace and serenity that even in a dirty, overcrowded, understaffed county jail, I am still blessed. I do it for Holly. Thank you.
Thank you, Kathy. I bet y'all wish I'd given her my 5 minutes. I'd like to introduce Bob from Area 3, Arizona.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Bob M., and I'm an alcoholic. Grateful son of Mr. and Mrs. Morris. I was going to write something down, but I heard the music start playing last night, and I just went and listened to the music, and I didn't write anything down. My first introduction to being incarcerated was as a young fella. My grandfather served 44 years in the Georgia State Prison, and I used to go down with my folks and visit him, and everybody else had big numbers across their chest, and he only had 3 digits in his number. He'd been there since 1928, and you know, they would talk. I didn't have much to say to my grandpa, but I looked around. I'm observant. You know, alcoholics are observant people, and I could see there was inmates and there was corrections officers, and I decided I'd like to be a corrections officer. Because I didn't want to be an inmate anyway. My alcoholism, my parents had, my mother's an alcoholic, my dad's an alcoholic, I had 10 little alcoholic children. And nobody warned us. You know, if the doctor said, Mrs. Morris, you have a healthy little alcoholic here, just keep him away from booze and he'll be okay. You know, I wouldn't be here today. Nobody said that. They just pushed me out in the cruel world and said, the main thing they said is don't drink alcohol. It's a sin. Man, I didn't want to be a sinner. But, And you know what? I went a long time until I just finished some boot camp in the Marine Corps, and all the guys were going to go down to the slop chute and drink. And I thought, man, that's sinful. But I had a sponsor into drinking, and my sponsor said, but Bob, wait a minute. It can't be a sin if Uncle Sam approves of it. Perfect logic. So I went down and I started some social drinking. I don't have time to describe it, but they sold Budweiser, long neck bottle for 5 cents, and they would sell three, that was the limit, and I would get three, and I would drink one and hold two, and it worked out good, and I could see they had chairs and tables and all kinds of stuff out there, but there was about 30 people in line, and I just went back and got in line. And you had to turn your empties in when you got three new ones. And I just kept going around and around that line, and I thought, hallelujah, this doesn't feel sinful at all. And my alcoholism sort of went downhill from there. Anyway, I had no intentions of getting in the correction facility. I came in Alcoholics Anonymous 1972 by mistake. I had no intentions of getting sober that day. That I was going to get drunk. I had planned it. It was a rotten Monday, and I was just going to get drunk. And this guy invited me to lunch. Now, I hadn't been invited to lunch in a long time. It caught me by surprise, and I went for it. And he took me over to the Alano Club there in Tucson and introduced me to AA. And I argued a lot that that wasn't my trouble. My problem was insanity. Insanity runs in my family, but my alcoholism, I was working on that. I was drinking. I had a plan. Now, if you drink 12 beers a day, see, now, if you just drink 11 the next day, and then 10, and then 9, pretty soon you're a non-drinker. See, so I had a plan to quit. I never could work the plan, but I still had my plan, so I felt pretty good about that. Anyway, I got into AA. The guy said, you will get everything you need to not drink one day at a time. I didn't believe him. But let me tell you what he said that got me here, that keeps me here. He said, Bob, I believe that if you don't drink alcohol one day at a time, the insanity will leave your life. And it won't come back as long as you don't drink alcohol. To go from insane to sane, and all I had to do was give up drinking. And, you know, I wasn't having that much fun with drinking. I just drank because I had to, not because I was looking for fun. So I tried it, and I expected to get drunk any day, but I didn't. And it surprised me. It amazed me. And I, right off the bat, they assigned me a sponsor day one. You know, I would have never gotten a sponsor, so they assigned me one. But I complained to him. I told him I couldn't work these steps because there's too much God in there, and I didn't want to have anything to do with God. I wasn't even on speaking terms with God. And I used his name in vain on a pretty regular basis. But my sponsor said something to me I've never heard a sponsor say to any alcoholic. He said, you don't have to work those steps, young fella. He said, all you have to do is go to a meeting every day and don't drink between meetings. And I said, yes, sir, I'll do it. And that's what I did. I went to a meeting every day. And if you don't have to work the steps, Alcoholics Anonymous is a great place to hang out. I mean, this is a paving place. I mean, there's a lot going on. It's like a three-ring circus. You know, there's something going on in one of the rings. Just keep watching. And I see people. I'd go to meetings, you know, and I'd just hang out. I had some stuff I did. I made sure I sat between two pretty girls when I went to the meeting because I know what happens at the end of the meeting. You hold hands and say the Lord's Prayer. And the people were working steps, and they were wringing their hands and just really sweating it, and I didn't have to work any steps. It was a lot of fun. So I went. Now, the only reason that I went to the prison is my grand sponsor made my sponsor make me go, because he'd been doing a prison 146 miles from Tucson for 8 years, and he wanted someone else to do it. And he told my sponsor to make me do it, and I did it. And I didn't do it because I wanted to do it. I just did it to get out of town. The heat was on at my house, and I'd do anything to get out of town. So I started doing it. It's interesting. We're not all here today because Bill Wilson wanted to get sober. That's not why we're here. We're here today because Ebbie Thatcher wanted to stay sober. And he went looking for an alcoholic, and he remembered Bill Wilson, and he went over and talked to him, and Bill didn't want to get sober. As a matter of fact, Bill was happy that Ebbie wasn't drinking because he was going to drink it all. He didn't have to share his booze. He wanted to drink, and nobody was going to mess with him. But as you all know, he got sober a little later on. And the fellowship wasn't founded because Dr. Bob Smith wanted to get sober. He didn't want to get sober. In fact, he gave Bill, he was pressed into giving Bill 15 minutes. Bill wanted to stay sober. I caught that from Kenny and Kathy. So the program is all about people who want to stay sober. And I didn't want to stay sober especially, but I wanted to make my sponsor happy. I love a happy sponsor. So I was going up there and doing that meeting, and I did it for 8 years also. I want to tell this one other thing. I always wanted to be a police officer. I think I learned that in the prison where my grandfather was. But they never come down to the drunk tank looking for a few good men. And I got about 7 years of sobriety under my belt, and like Kathy was talking about, I had a lot of misdemeanors, but I didn't have any felonies. Well, I committed the felonies, but I wasn't caught. And so I went, I was talking to a guy, and I told him, I always want to be a cop, but I'm too old. Well, by then I was like 42. And he said, they've taken the restriction off, Bob. You can be a cop, no matter how old you are, if you've got the right stuff. So I thought, I'll get this out of my system. I went down there, took the application, and I was accepted. And, you know, they give you 600 questions, and I just, I learned in AA rigorous honesty. You just tell the truth. Let the chips fall where they may, and I answered them all. You know, have you ever been arrested? Well, sure, drunk and disorderly and stuff like that, and they didn't see anything wrong with that. Anyway, I was accepted, and I went to the police academy, and it's not like the movie. It's a little different. They get serious, and they teach you a lot. But if you watch Dragnet, you're pretty good. You'll know some of the answers. 28 of us started the academy, and April the 20th, 1979, 14 of us were commissioned police officers for the city of Tucson. And I'm here to tell you, it's a long way from the back seat to the front seat of a squad car. But this is one alcoholic that made that trip. Now, I'm no longer a cop. I was just a cop for 5 years. I just wanted to see if I had the right stuff. While I was there, I saw a lot of cops go from the front seat to the back seat. It's a real short trip, you know. One drink and, boy, you're on your way. Anyway, I wondered what I was doing there. And I started a meeting for cops. My own opinion, 75% of all the cops are alcoholics. What better place to be if you're an alcoholic? Be a cop. Cops don't arrest cops. You catch a cop drunk driving, you take him home, put him to bed. You cover for him. We call it Spree Corps in the Marines. We take care of our own. I was supposed to talk about corrections. I did. I went to the meeting up at the Aragon State Prison at Florence for 15 years every Saturday, and I did the Fort Grant every Sunday for 8 years. And then Howard Hughes died. I guess you guys heard about that. But Howard owned like a half a million acres in Tucson. And so the minute he died, the government gobbled it up and said back taxes weren't paid, and so they got it all. So they started building prisons down there in Tucson. We've got, they built 11 new prisons, and now they've got two more going. We got a big federal prison, I mean a big one, and now they just built a 5,000 bed federal prison because we got all this land, and you might as well put prisons on it. And, we have 19 meetings in those 11 prisons there in Tucson, the state prison, and we got the county jails, and, so we have a lot of correction work there in Tucson. Something that happened in Tucson recently, in the state of Arizona, I've been in the corrections for 32 years and travel all over the state and been to every prison in the state, and we started a corrections conference. You know, the only problem that we have in Alcoholics Anonymous is lack of communication. And the solution to that problem is communication. So we decided that the best thing to do is talk to the people in charge. And Kathy was talking about that. And you know how, well, she knows, she told you what they do when you call them and say, well, what about a meeting in your prison? That's the slow way and the uninformed way a lot of times. And we decided to start a correction conference. Now, because we have so many prisons in Arizona, we discovered that the federal prison has these training facilities. They train their guards. They have these beautiful facilities, big as this, and they let us use it. And we can have a weekend corrections conference at a federal prison, and we invite all of the people on the other side of the fence, the wardens, the jailers, the corrections officers, the judges. We invited this year we had the superintendent of prison for the state of Arizona there, and she talked for 2 hours about how things are going in the prison as they relate to Alcoholics Anonymous. She gave us her phone number. She said, we, the members of Alcoholics Anonymous, can call her at her office if we have any problems. The doors have opened up because of the conference. We have the people that run the prison tell us what they need. Tell us how we can operate inside their prison. We're guests at their prison. Now, they have rules and regulations, and we have to know those. We have to abide by the rules. We have to do it their way. I do a maximum security prison on Monday morning there in Tucson. Number five, the worst offenders is number five, and the least is the number one. And this number five prison, the guys move around in shackles quite often. They're a threat to society. Some of them, they give you two numbers, your threat to society and your threat to yourself. And we have a lot of five fives, and what I discovered, in the prison is, I met myself across the table. The message I carry is the message I need to hear. Those guys are... Those guys are serving my time for me. They're keeping me sober. I'm not keeping them sober. It doesn't matter if they stay sober or not. What's important is that I stay sober. Corrections is where it's at for me. That's where I've been. I didn't want to be here.
I didn't want to work any steps. I let my sponsor shame me into step one. I'm not powerless over alcohol. I'm a former Marine. But he caught me one day talking to some guys, and he said, "Well, Bob, if your life is so manageable, why is the police department managing it for you? Sponsors are so smart." And then he wouldn't leave it alone. He said, "And yeah, how about that? I know the judicial system is taking measures to manage your life for long periods against your will." And he was right. I had a little bit of unmanageability in my life. And the truth is, I didn't get into trouble every time I drank. But every time I got into trouble, I had been drinking. And alcohol played a big role in my life. It directed my life. So I took step one. Not a big deal. I wasn't going to take any other steps. But the step two, I saw the... If you go to a meeting every day in Alcoholics Anonymous, you see what goes on. And I... The doors to AA are wide open. They'll allow any sicko in here. Thank God it was that way when I so desperately needed it. But it's still that way. And I watched the sickos come in, and I'd take their inventory like that. I didn't think they'd make it. There wasn't enough there to get well. But they surprised me. You know, they kept coming back. They got well. This one guy, he must have been a salesman. He looked like a salesman, but he was dirty and ugly, and just his clothes were all wrinkled. It looked like he slept in them, and maybe he did. And he started coming in a clean white shirt, but my first ex-wife used to wash my white shirts and put them in the refrigerator. Now, I never figured that one out, but they were so wrinkled, and they were in the refrigerator, and she'd take them out and iron them, but... this guy wore them right out of the refrigerator, I think. They really looked bad, and I used to watch him. But after a few weeks, he came in an iron shirt, and I was amazed. This guy got on a white iron shirt. He started looking good, and then a couple weeks later, he came with a tie. And this guy was really looking good. His eyes cleared up, and he was combing his hair, and... I just thought, man, this thing really works. And that's when I went to my sponsor and I said, well, it just wasn't just him. There were a lot of people in AA getting well, and I wasn't getting well. And I talked to my sponsor about it. And he said, oh, if you want to get well, you got to work these steps. You see, he had me. He had me. So that was my step two. But step three, I was told I'd get everything I need one day at a time. And I'd been going up to the Arizona State Prison for about a year and a half at Fort Grant. Billy the Kid was at Fort Grant 3 days, so it's a nice prison. I was going up there and doing a lot of first step meetings. You know, in prison they need first step meetings, and we did a lot of first step meetings. And one day these guys all met me at the front door, and they'd never done that before. About 60 inmates, and they were in a tight circle, and I was in the middle. And they said, Bob, we'd like to talk about God today. And I thought, the last place on earth they'd want to talk about God is Arizona State Prison, right? They said, no, AA is full of God stuff, and you never talk about God. So I said, okay, we'll talk about God next week, but this week we're going to do a step one meeting. And I went back to Tucson and I took a crash course in God. Now, if you ever have to take a crash course in God, Alcoholics Anonymous is the place to do it. And I knew the people who knew about God because I made sure there was two seats between me and them. I thought if they rubbed me, I'd get it. And I didn't want it. So I sought them out and they all referred me to chapter 4 in the big book. And I thought, I'll read chapter 4 until it gets spooky. Now, I've been pistol whipped with Jesus, so I know what, I know about that stuff, and I didn't want to get into it. And I thought, I'll read chapter 4. I skipped over chapter 4 because I didn't know what an agnostic was, but I knew I wasn't one. So they wanted me to read it, and I read chapter 4, and I said, I'll read it until it gets spooky. If they start talking about walking the streets of glory, I'm going to close that sucker up. And I read it, and there wasn't one spooky phrase in the whole thing. Not one spooky word. When they come down to God's job description, that's what I was interested in, because I had to talk about God the next week. They said, God is everything good. I love good stuff. I've always loved the good stuff. I hate the bad stuff, but I love the good stuff. And they said, that's all God is. It's the good stuff. And His realm is goodness. And if you turn your life and your will over the care of God, you're just in a realm of goodness. That's all there is to it. And I didn't want to do it for a long time. See, when I joined the Marine Corps, I joined for 3 years, but they kept me 5. And I didn't like it. I 2 weeks in the Marine Corps, I wanted to go home because that was not my bag. I just didn't like it. They picked on me all the time. But I didn't want to do step 3 because it sounded like you'd do it forever. You know, once you join, you're there. They got you out. But they explained to them in AA that you do step 3 for one 24-hour period. And that's what I did. And I turned my life and my will over the care of God for 24 hours. And I had a very good day. And the next day I did it again. And I did it this morning a little before daylight. I do it every day, one day at a time. And that's the story, the message I carry into the alcoholic from the prison, that there is a God and he works for every alcoholic. I call him the God of the alcoholic. And he probably works for everyone, but especially for alcoholics. Thank you all for allowing me to share.
What a way to start Friday morning. It's convention. Seems like corrections committees, at least in my area and some of the other areas I've been visit, seem to be the larger committees. They seem to be the happier committees, at least in my experience. So if you are here and interested in getting involved in some area of service to carry the message, to give back some of a little bit of what's been given to you, maybe you would be find your niche in the corrections committee in Area 64, and I want to thank a lot of members of my area that are out here today supporting me. And you, the corrections committee is the largest committee, and it's the neatest committee. We have some time for some questions and answers for our esteemed panelists. Now we know they are, don't we? Yes, ma'am. Yes, and if I need, I'll repeat the question so that everyone will be able to hear it.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Jenny Romano, and I am an alcoholic. Hi, Jenny. I am the senior coordinator for the Women's Federal Prison in Phoenix for AA meetings, and my question is to Bob, do you have a particular message to the Native Americans?
Lady wants to know if Bob has a particular message for the Native Americans.
Thank you. Absolutely. The message I have is for Native Americans, non-Native Americans, Black Americans, White Americans. I was just given an opportunity to start a meeting at the Pahoanol from Reservation. 3 million acres, bigger than the state of Connecticut, only 20,000 Indians out there. But they have their own prison. They have a casino. They can afford a prison. So they keep their own people in their own prison. They have 227 members and 13 are female. And we put a meeting on there every Wednesday morning from 9 to 10. And it's the same message. It's exactly the same message. They hear, and they are hearing it. You know, and that's what we have to do. We're not different. God only created one type of human being, male and female of the species.
Good question, good answer. I was at a traditions workshop one time, and the fellow said he was asked by someone, said, we need to start some meetings for people who are mentally challenged in the Dallas area. And he said, we already have them. Mandy. That's enough. You may sit down.
Give me two more minutes. What I wanted to say real quick about corrections funding is one of the things we did in our area was, believe it or not, we're not a very rich state, and we only had $600 a year for area literature fund, which isn't a lot, but many of our districts take care of it themselves. But in my district, District 2, I asked my home group's permission to pass a corrections basket. And when we do our seventh tradition, I stand up and I have a little spiel and I make it very clear which is our seventh tradition basket and then which is our corrections basket, and they look very, very different. And I think I started that in 2003, and my home group has about 20 members. We get a pretty good meeting, and since then I say it's a program of change and we'll gladly take yours. And I shake the little basket and we've gotten probably $3,000 now, and my home group basket has bought all the literature for corrections in my district. I also put out a box called Books for Crooks. And you can buy a book for if you're celebrating something or you're just grateful or whatever and put it in the box, and then I ship it off to different prisons in the state that for their districts that they don't have enough money for books. So that's always a good thing to do. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
And I just wanted to ask you about how to attract more people into the institution of work. Some people often like to buy, and I've seen that some of the other people survive and have their own support. And sometimes I look over and thousands of them, we have hundreds of thousands of million members we have in LA, and we get 200.
When I got sober and was forced to read the big book, I read that 50% of those who come to AA never drink again, and of the 50% that do, half of them come back. That's within 1939. That's not the way it is today. According to GSO, less than 20% come into Alcoholics Anonymous, make it 90 days. Now, that statistic is pretty drastic. But I traveled to U.S. Fair State at my own expense and went to an H&I conference in Anaheim. And I heard that of the people in H&I, in the state of California, 95% never drink again. I'm an alcoholic, but I'm not stupid. I'm going with a 95%. And lo and behold, I've stayed sober.
I should have repeated the question, because I'm afraid some people in the back may not have heard the question, and it was to how to get more people involved in carrying the message inside facilities. Yes.
Smaller than other things, and he is exactly right.
In a correctional facility setting? Yes. Bob, do you have small meetings? Any experience with small meetings? I mean, and permission.
I can try and answer that.
I'm Kenny. I'm an alcoholic. And now, the facility that I've been taking the meetings into, of course, originally, this was before I started going in. There was a mandatory meetings, and they didn't have a very good turnout. And since they made it voluntary, I think there's like 100 guys that come to these meetings now. It's overwhelming. They had to split it up into three groups, and luckily we have volunteers for every group. But in short term, I can't help you there. But I know it's so hard to get people and to help. And to answer that other question, you know, how do you get volunteers? And I think that's been one of the biggest problems is to get people involved in service work. And for me, like I say, it's been so rewarding and so gratifying. Recently read in Grapevine that I can't force people into service work, but I can take on more responsibilities myself, and in turn, maybe others will see that. I go around and I talk at meetings. I share my experience, strength, and hope, and in turn, maybe I can get others to want to carry the message also, and maybe step up and do service work. But we have we have a step meetings, and we also have just regular AA meetings. We try to change the formats. And first step meetings, of course, when a first step is called for. So we just try to offer a little bit of everything to everybody. Thanks.
Thank you. I can probably be forgiven for calling Kenny Bob, but if I call Kathleen Bob, y'all come see me. Yes. Hey, Don.
We used a tin can when we actually started the tin can many years ago. It was a great can, it wasn't just a pass that we knew it was for, and that's why we got it down the valley. We screwed up the can with an extension. We went home and found a gallon of two cans, and we turned that pass and made it to the tin. I bring this up because it's been a mainstay for us, probably the largest committee, service committee in alcohol, we definitely the oldest. We passed that tin can for some other meetings. Our budget last year was for Northern California Hospital Institute, $465,000. That's a lot of money, but when you realize we gave 750 meetings a week for 32 state prisons in Northern California, and 1 federal prison, 2 state hospitals, hardly 19 state prisons in Northern California. It works out to be about $11.60 a meeting. We are rivaling cable cans as far as buying news. Somebody asked that. Well, you know,
about all the ATM money and
whatever, and I'm coming from
Tennessee, New York,
where New York is very happy with this. We've got
I'm talking about the experience, and I really have to know. I'm a very good man. What do you think? How do you? The question is never going to go wrong.
The lady would like to know what type of message that you carry to the person who may never get out or is on death row.
I have a friend in Louisiana that takes a message into Angola, and as some of you may know, that's one of the hardest, worst prisons we have in our United States. And when he first went in there, he was really scared because he said, you know, what am I going to say to these people? And when he got in there, he found out that there were people in that prison that had been sober 25 and 30 years, and they were never, ever, ever going to get out. And he says whenever he's having a bad day, what he remembers is somebody's serene in Angola. And, you know, what we have is a message to carry that we can live happily and usefully one day at a time. And, you know, I hope I never face life in prison, but that what I have to learn is to live in the moment. And I think our one day at a time program is the thing. And like what Holly said, even though she's going to get out, is that right now, right here, she's blessed. And she's, well, one of the things I didn't read is she's been able, they've allowed her to start her own AA meetings in her cell, in her dormitory, because sometimes the volunteers aren't allowed in. And that I carry to Holly a message of hope, and she's carrying it to those inmates. And, you know, that's what I can tell them, that you know, I can find peace within myself no matter where I am, because, you know, that's how it works. Thanks.
Lots of hands. One of the two of you have had your hand up a while. Go ahead.
Thank you kindly, oh, my name, and I'm a great
roommate.
I just got roped into doing some work in Arlington, Virginia, where I'm from, in the local jail. It's not here, it's a jail. It sure has helped me stay sober, like you say, and I tell that to the guys. I may not be doing my thing, but you guys are really beautiful, beautiful stuff. You can be sober. And I'm concerned because I watch these people who've been through many, many treatment programs. And they've heard about AA, and as soon as they hit the street, off the drink. So I just wanted to mention something about the group area representing, having a program to let these people know that we have not that good, that there's a place to go, and where is it? And I just hope you can talk a little more about that.
Pre-relief program. Bridging that, and I will speak on for Area 64. We have a program, we call it pre-release contact program, to distinguish it between the bridging the gap program that is primarily, or is the majority of that work is done between treatment facilities and the outside AA meetings. We have a post office box, and we give it to all our volunteers that are going into prisons and jails, and give any inmate that's getting out within 3 to 6 months or earlier can write that post office box. And we have a list of volunteers across our area that we talk to at our area assembly meetings. And we get their name and address, and we let them know that maybe a while before they'll hear from somebody, so we have to continually keep updating our list. But we try to connect somebody on the outside with a fellow getting out, coming close to their area. And it's just like any 12-step work. Two people go the first night to pick up the inmate who's newly released, hopefully on the first night, because it's been also shown that if they go to a meeting on that first night, their chances of staying in recovery are better. If they miss a night or two, they may go back to their old ways. But we have a statewide, area-wide. Tennessee covers one area, and we have an area-wide PO box. Also, there's a newsletter bulletin that's published 4 times a year by GSO, and it's sent out to all the correctional chairs. And if you haven't seen it, ask your area corrections chair, what's this little newsletter sharing behind the walls? It has little snippets of information gleaned from letters that inmates have written to GSO. Kathy had a letter that she read from an inmate, or a former inmate. But these things are in that little newsletter sharing behind the walls. And at the end of that newsletter, it says, if you're going to be released within 3 to 6 months, write GSO, and they'll write the area chair and try to find a where the inmate's going to be released and try to find and connect them with an outside sponsor. Hope that helps you. Ma'am?
I am my daughter. I am alcoholic. I'm 4 years in that system. I'm a general therapist in California about 4 years. And one of them is alive. But also by getting people involved in our hospital, we announce in every meeting that we go to about our business meeting. If I hear someone share the meetings about a young person, someone, you know, I just, hey, I've got a great job here. And I drag them off, you know, during the business meeting. And I talk to everyone I come in contact with. You know, share the message, get them involved. And then it gets to me. I mean, they grab me. I I was 85 pounds, you know, been down for a long time, and sort of just some days to grab me, and then I got a place to do it, and did, you know. And, you know, I was in awe of the front of that house model when people see on Instagram. So the reason for being able to put this piece before me, I don't know.
Thank you, ma'am, for your comments. We're right at the end of our time. I promised the lady, if she can be brief, you may be last.
Thank you. My name is Stephanie. I'm a sister of Stephanie. I'm a sister of Stephanie. I'm a sister of Stephanie. I'm a sister of
Thank you very, very much.
Kalamazoo. I just want to mention that at our elementary school, we have the high school, a black high school literature that they take in these meetings. And we all got up to grapevines and told them where to have one. My husband always asked, when I get home, most of the time, we're in the institution, but
our time has run out. I really apologize, and I didn't call. I apologize for the people who I didn't need to call on here, on the right side of the room. I seem to be calling on people to my left. There is another correction seminar, session, workshop. Look through your program. You'll find it. I believe it's tomorrow. It has something to do with corrections. Maybe you can go there and get some of your questions answered. I appreciate all you people for asking those wonderful questions and sharing those wonderful shares. But I especially want to thank our panelists. They did a great job. Thank you. Give me another round. Let us form an AA shape and close with the I Am Responsible Declaration.
They may check out the room up on that. I am responsible to anyone, anywhere, reaching out for help. I want to hand the day.